Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, I've really been looking forward to this interview because it is going to take us into history. It's going to take us into an arena where women participated a long time ago but were not acknowledged. And today in the United States, we're so accustomed to particular privileges, as it would have been defined back then when we're going to be talking about Zen women. Now, the subtitle to this book is Beyond Tea Ladies, Iron Maidens, and Macho Masters. My guest is Grace Shireson. Grace, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me and for your interest in the book, Zen Women.
Oh, yes, it is something very unlike what I had expected. And when I got into the book, I thought, this is really powerful information. And I know when I called you to book the time, I asked you, how long did it take you to do research on these women that basically have been unknown relative to history? How long did it take you to do it?
It took me about 10 years, although informally I'd been interested in it for many years before that. It was 10 years of time that was dedicated to traveling in Asia, meeting women there, gathering some scraps of information, going to temples. And it was a total of 10 years of research, both at home and abroad.
Now, I want my listeners to know a little bit about your background. You're a Dharma teacher in the Suzuki Roshi lineage, and you had a particular teacher, an abbot of the Berkeley Zen Center that ordained you. You also have been, you use the words, empowered to teach koans by the Kido
Fukushima
Roshi. I mean, you've just got quite an interesting background. Now, you're a clinical psychologist professionally. You have worked especially with women and families. How is it that Zen became a part of your life? What was it that caused you to seek out this particular area of instruction?
Well, I think I was always interested in religion and spirituality. I had a strong feeling as a child when I went into the Jewish synagogue and just felt what people were reaching for and what might be available to them. But there wasn't really a place for me at that time in my own religion. So later when I began when I was in college and learned to meditate, it seemed open at the time. It seemed fairly open to women participating, and some of those boundaries that I had encountered and the lack of interest in women's participation were not present at the time in the Zen centers. So that's how I got interested in meditation, and I think it hooks up in psychology with how is it that we use the human equipment we have, the body, mind, knowledge, and wisdom we're capable of as human beings? How do we use it to the fullest capacity? How do we develop ourselves so that our consciousness actually can be useful as a transformative agent, transforming our suffering and our conflict into peace and compassion? So that's how I got interested in both of these fields.
I was most intrigued with the history that you were able to compile and bring together in this book, because a lot of history relative to Zen is totally dominated by men. And you, being of the modern era, decided, I want to find out what happened to the women here. There had to be some women involved. And I was so intrigued with what you came up with. In fact, one of your comments that you made in your book was that Buddha did not want women involved in very much of, you know, other than cooking and cleaning, didn't want them involved in his quote-unquote educational process, yet it was an aunt of his that started things. Give us a little bit of that story.
Okay. Well, first I want to say a little bit about why I took an historical approach to studying the development of women in Zen. We do think of the samurai, very tough as nails, macho master, when we think about Zen. And we don't think about the Zen nuns and what they may have contributed. And when I began getting more serious about how I might fulfill my teaching role in a Zen community, I did encounter, you know, that what we call the bamboo ceiling, not the glass ceiling, the bamboo ceiling in the Zen community. And so the more I asked about it, the more defenses, see, I'm a psychologist, so the more psychological defenses were triggered. So I thought, well, if I'm really going to talk about women's place in the practice, let me talk about it from the positive and not the accusatory. Let me find wonderful examples of women, starting with the Buddha's aunt, who had spiritual attainments, accomplishments, and offerings for the community. Now, the Buddha's aunt, who was also the one who raised him as his stepmother, she was his mother's sister, and his mother died maybe a week after giving birth to him, was one of the first women who prevailed upon the Buddha for ordination. We do believe that he did give her ordination. Maybe he restricted her from home leaving, but, you know, now scholars are saying he probably did ordain her. Mm-hmm. However, after the Buddha died, what was written into the rules about ordination for women were some very repressive and heavy restrictions about women entering the practice that seemed to carry over across the centuries, limiting women's empowerments in Zen and the respect that the community had for them in Buddhism in general, because they were always secondary to the monks' community as the rules were written, and they probably were written after the time of the Buddha, because the rules state that there need to be 10 nuns present for the first nun to be ordained, and if there weren't 10 nuns, then how did the Buddha ordain them? So he must have not had those rules to begin with, and they probably were added later in history.
Well, that sounds like so much of what went on with Christianity. You had 8 special rules here. And I went through these 8 rules. Of course, we're in our modern spectrum, but holy Moses, women were considered low on the totem pole anyway. I mean,
yes, that's right. In the Hindu tradition from which Buddhism sprang, it was considered that to be born a woman was a punishment for misdeeds in previous lives. So all of this was woven in. You know, I can actually believe that based on the treatment I've had this lifetime. I must be paying off some debt for bad behavior.
Oh, for that lady. No, that's not, you know, hey, come on. We only come in 2 models in this life experience, male or female.
Yes, but it's so consistent. It's so consistent across the planet that women are in a submissive position. So I'm wondering, well, maybe there's something to this, that there's some punishment here. We certainly receive, let's put it this way, we certainly receive punishing behaviors. And
it's time to kick that to the moon. It's
yeah,
time to really
we're working
get
on it.
That's right, that's right. But let's talk about these 8 rules, because again, and for those of you listening, you have to keep in mind the time frame. And you don't know when these rules were written out, but like so many different edicts, and I don't care where you go in the world, but this particular time involvement, and you think of the cultural attitude, a lot of violence, a tremendous amount of violence, and actually it seems like a lot like what's got on going on today, but the tremendous attitudes to encapsulate women, it was just amazing. So you gals need to know about this, because it's important to understand the background so that we don't go backwards, we go forwards in our thinking. And that's one of the reasons this book was so fascinating to me, because of the Asian cultural environment. And I think anything we can contribute to our own knowledge and understanding of what in the past contributed to this and how these powerful women that you write about in your book are just so awesome. Again, what are these eight rules?
The eight rules, which probably were written after the time of the Buddha, again, spring from this idea that women, as you say, are to be encapsulated or separated. A nun of 100 years shall, even if she's been a nun ordained for 100 years, shall bow down before a monk who was ordained even one day. So the most senior nun was always junior to the most junior monk. So no matter what your seniority was, you were not in a position to state your teaching in front of a monk. A nun needed to spend her practice time where there was a monk. The nuns needed to confess to the monks, but that wasn't true of the monks to the nuns. And a nun who had committed an offense, broken one of the rules of the community, would undergo discipline before both sanghas, before the male and the female order, and that was not true for monks. And the nuns had to wait 2 years before being ordained. I think this was an idea that, well, we know that most babies are delivered after 9 months, but maybe women can hold on to them for up to 2 years, so we don't want any women, pregnant women, sneaking into the order. The nun is not to criticize a monk under any circumstances, and even though then the eighth rule, even though they've already said that, they say it again. Admonition of monks by nuns is forbidden, but admonition of nuns by monks is not forbidden. So clearly, being scolded by women is a big psychological issue for men. And I think in the new book, The Female Brain, The Male Brain, there are two books written by Luann Brizendine, The Male Brain and The Female Brain. In The Male Brain, she describes how hard it is for men to receive criticism from women, and that wives should know for every criticism they give their husbands, they probably have to give 5 compliments just to get through the biological screening device. Mm-hmm. The important thing about these 8 special rules is not just that they operated sometime several hundred years after the Buddha, which would have been, you know, maybe 2 centuries before Christ, but that today, in October of 2009, a monk in Thailand, a monk in Australia from the Thai forest tradition, tried to ordain 4 women without these 8 special rules and was excommunicated by the Buddhist Thai establishment and from Thailand. And he was the highest ranking Westerner in the Thai forest order. And this happened in October 2009. So you can see that the echoes of this, and that has echoed all over the world, that, you know, this stipulation that the nun's order be secondary and that it only can be established when there already are 10 existent nuns, was challenged by this Australian monk who was the bishop in the Thailand tradition of Buddhism and was excommunicated. He's an Australian man. And
wow.
And so this is happening today.
So
we can see that it's very hard once we take on a tradition to sort out, you know, well, what were some of the effects of social conditions on these really wonderful teachings for transforming suffering that come from Buddhism? What were some of the effects of the social conditions that perverted the way the religion was embodied and enacted?
I found some of the women you wrote about, the Iron Grinder Lu. Oh, I liked her. And she, I mean, of these women that you wrote about were women of tremendous strength and character. You have a story in, you know, about the old lady who burned down the hut. And I thought, yo, it's, you know, there's so much here. And let's talk about this lady because we're going back in time to 870. Is that, what was their time frame? 870?
Yeah, that's right. It was, it's a little hard to pinpoint it at that point, but yes, somewhere in the 9th century, around 870, middle of the 9th century there. So in the case of these women, the interesting thing about them, yes, they were very strong and they were very powerful, and they are portrayed to be as tough as men, as if somehow getting this Buddhist training releases them from their feminine identity entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And they now become men once they become enlightened. So that was what I meant in my title when I said moving beyond the Iron Maiden. I mean, how can a woman show power and be feminine at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think in the case of the woman who burned down the hut, you see a real integration of human good sense and strength. And I think this is where women excel in spiritual development, is that they have integrated their human characteristics and their qualities, their emotional life, with their spiritual development. And the woman who burned down the hut hosted and fed a monk for some 20 years and decided, well, what does he have to show for these 20 years of practice in this little hut? So she sent a young woman to seduce him and to see whether he was going, how he was going to respond to this young woman's appeal that he have sex with her. And the monk turned her down without really noticing. Well, this is a little weird. I'm an old monk and here's this young woman coming to me. I wonder what is wrong. You know, maybe, you know, she's looking up to me in some way for something that I could actually help her with. Maybe she's missing love in her family. He doesn't say any of these things. Instead, he gives her a totally self-centered response, which is, I'm like a withered tree on a cold rock. This is the pre-erectile dysfunction drugs. So he describes himself in an impotent way, without any love, compassion, or ability to have sex, as a withered tree on a cold rock. But he doesn't, he's talking about his own, well, I'm not interested in you. He doesn't say, what would make you, a young woman, come to me in this way? He has no compassion or interest in her development. So at that point, when the young woman goes back and reports the monk's words to the old lady who burned down the hut, she did burn it down as a way of saying, I'm not going to provide shelter for you to develop yourself to be such a selfish person, no matter what your spiritual development is. You have no regard for this young woman who came to you wanting to be cared for. Not that he should have had sex with her, but he should have cared about why she was coming to him rather than just telling her he wasn't interested.
There are some women that you have in here that I think have a great deal of courage, and the submission positioning that they had to go through. Now, give us some information about how it originated. And you have a section that talks about the transmission of the female Zen Buddhist order. I mean, this to me was interesting because it shows a progression, and that as much as these women were to be put under the thumb, it reminds me a great deal of what women had to go through in the Catholic Church.
Absolutely.
You know, and even in the Jewish faith. I mean, just there are so many examples of this. So when we're referring to Zen, it's also a complement of what has existed in so many other modalities.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear.
Yeah, pretty standard.
Yeah, it's pretty standard. The fear is just incredible.
Yeah,
I mean,
need to keep women in a one-down position and own them, control them, and say that they're better than women has been pretty consistent across every culture. So in the women's order, the points that I make about how women took this practice on, even when the convent systems had died out. After all, women, because of the 8 special rules, were always considered secondary to the monks. So why would anyone support them financially? So eventually, when the convent system wasn't very strong, women would have to go study with male teachers. The interesting thing, and I think it's also true for people in the West today who are interested in Zen Buddhism and other forms of Buddhism, is that this was something for the privileged people to take hold of, and particularly the privileged women, the women who had an education, which was not the case for all women,
Right.
And the women who had the protection of their wealthy families to go against some of the rules and were allowed to take it on. And like the Buddha's aunt, who was in fact a queen, much of what she did in standing up and insisting that there be a female order was to do it for the sake of women who did not have the privileges that she had. And so mm-hmm. many of the women who stood up and became empowered through the Buddhist training system used the opportunities and the liberation of the mind that they'd received from their Buddhist training to help other women who did not have the same privileges.
Now, this was in Korea, Japan, China. Buddhism, you know, came, like you said,
in India,
Yeah, right, in India. Now, the part on the Japanese nuns, I really found very interesting because the Japanese nuns were just such a counterpoint. You use the term vibrant to
mm-hmm.
the culture stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And in Japan, you said the women were looked at as being weak, dependent, uneducated, and submissive. And I would say just what you said, unless you were of the upper class, that was true. Because
yes.
your life literally would have been in danger, just like it was with the blacks in the United States as slaves. If you
yeah.
did become educated, you learned how to read, you could understand,
yeah.
you know, you could write, you could communicate. You were dangerous.
Yes.
You
yes,
were dangerous.
Yes, that's right. And the most beautiful piece about the women of Japan was that from early history, 13th century down another 500-600 years, the women in Japan took control of the situation there that made it so that other women could not get a divorce. Women did not have any legal rights to get
mm-hmm.
a divorce. So the privileged women of Japan started a convent where women, like the Underground Railway, women of Japan who were in abusive relationships or marriages that they wanted out from, could run away and get into these convents. And if they served in the convent for 2 years as a nun, they were given a decree of divorce, which they could get in no other way. They would have to be runaways or become prostitutes to support themselves if they could
mm-hmm.
not have a legitimate life after they ran away from their marriage. So this was restoring women to a place, restoring their dignity and integrity if they'd been in an abusive relationship. And one of the little sidelines of this is only members of the emperor's family could wear a purple robe in Buddhism. And the women who went to this particular convent, Tokeji, were granted the purple robe, which really would elevate their self-image as part of this healing process of coming
mm-hmm.
out of an abusive relationship. So in my mind, these were the first shelters for abusive women in the world, and like the Underground Railway, people smuggled these women into
mm-hmm.
These convents, and there's a picture of one showing a shoe flying over the door with a swarthy samurai in pursuit of a woman, and apparently if she could get one shoe across the door, the door frame, she was in, and there was nothing he could do to get her out because these women of the emperor's family had considerable power over the government
mm-hmm.
and more power than even the male monks had in protecting people. So once a woman was taken into this convent, it was very, very hard. Maybe in the history of the 600 years, only one woman was successfully removed by the husband, and then he was punished severely by the imperial family because the nun said, "We can't let this happen," and all of his land and wealth was taken away from him because he violated the rules of recapturing his wife. So it was kind of an exciting story, and there were even bodyguards
yes.
that these nuns hired to guard the women in the temple and to protect them from the abuse of the patriarchy.
Well, Masako, who was the wife of the shogun Yoritomo, was called
mm-hmm.
the Nun Shogun. I like that. They could make a movie out of that, the Nun Shogun. But
yeah,
it's
right.
so interesting because it wasn't until 1873 that women in Japan could even get a divorce.
Yeah.
And that's why I said your book is just so informative. And I would dare say that many Asian women, whether they were Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Taiwanese, no matter where they would come from, they're unaware of this history about these wonderful women.
Well, I think that's true for the most part, particularly in Japan, less so in Korea, maybe in Taiwan, where the nuns now outnumber the monks 6-1. They may be reclaiming their history, but certainly when I was writing this book, some of the Japanese women said to me, well, you know, we asked when we were in high school if there were any women in Zen Buddhism, and we were told there were not in their Japanese high schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that there will be some interest in the Asian countries, at least among some of them, in the history of these women. But I think for us today, we have a lot of complaints, and we're entitled to them, to see examples of women who overcame these obstacles for the benefit of other women and for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a tremendous encouragement.
I just think these women are incredible, and for you to bring forth this history is absolutely awesome, because you're bringing forth, it's not just about Zen, it's about attitudes within cultural environments that still imprison the female thinking to this day. And
yeah, it imprisons the male thinking too.
Yes, and that's the key. One of the biggest fallacies in the world is this fear of the male towards the female. Now, this has been an indoctrination that's gone on for thousands of years. And a wise male will always understand that there's nothing there to be feared. In fact, when the women, and this was demonstrated with these powerful women, the fact that they were about community, they were about, yes, let's make things better for life, because they could see the areas of need,
right,
and they had often a broader scope of vision. So
yeah,
those male monks that were supportive, just like this gentleman you talked about in 2009 that got excommunicated, my goodness, how many times has this happened in different environments?
Well, it's happened quite a lot.
It has. It really, really has. And again, you go through so many stories, and I know there's one here by an abbess who was just exceptional, and there was a male Zen master that taught her, and he broke the rules to teach her, and that is just, the teacher was Obaku Haikuo, I believe it is, I could be mispronouncing it, Haikuo, and then this was Japan's great abbess.
Yes.
Ryōnin Genso?
Ryōnin Genso, yes. And she had to convince him, even though he saw all of her potential, the fear that she was going to be a seductress within his temple was overwhelming. And so he turned her away. And the story is that she took an iron to burn her face to prove to him that even though she was a woman and couldn't change that, she needed to change his attitude that her purpose in life was to be a seductress. Her purpose in life was to fulfill her spiritual aspirations, and that was what she proved when she said, I can throw away my feminine beauty, but I cannot throw away my aspirations to realize full enlightenment.
Well, again, this is amazing, because in the Asian environment, and in China, the Confucian philosophy, and there were other belief systems in place, and I'm quoting directly from your book, women were seen as the property of their family, subject to commands of father, husband, and later their own sons. Your book is compelling. It is so educational, the history, the people that you bring out, and the flow of information that you've got, I think makes for fascinating reading. And what I even like better is that you do not make it, gee whiz, we're going to be against all of the guys in this. No. You're trying to promote understanding that the male and the female can stand very balanced in life.
Yes.
And they can have a harmony. And that is part of what is creating a revolution in the environment at this time. Your book, Zen Women Beyond Tea Ladies, Iron Maidens, and Macho Masters, Grace, I think is just incredible. Now, you have a website called EmptyNestZendo.org, correct?
Uh-huh. Yes,
right.
I do.
So that's where people can go. I know we're just about out of time here. Do you have a quick thing you'd like to give in the way of a closing statement? We've got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'd like to say that women can use spiritual practice to open up their courage function rather than to become better and better little girls within these repressive systems, and that's what the Zen Women shows.
Thank you, Grace Sharathan, for being with me. The book Zen Women Beyond Tea Ladies, Iron Maidens, and Macho Masters. You need to know about these women. You're welcome, Grace. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, you just heard the ad about the Ren Fair here in the state of Washington. For those of you that are listening from the state of Washington, I want you to know I have 8 free passes, and that's for a family. In other words, 2 adults, 2 children. And if you would like to get a free pass, send me an email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or you can call me at my office, because I'm going to need to mail it to you, at 800-872-8852. This is a wonderful, wonderful event. I've been participating with these terrific people for 10 years, and I invite you to join me there and come by and say hello, because I'll have a booth there, and you'll see gigantic red lions on a bright yellow background on my booth. So just come on by, say hello. I'd love to meet you. Again, if you want to have a free pass, get in touch with me, and that is 800-872-8852, so I can mail that pass out to you. It's starting up in August. My goodness, that's just a short time away. How does time go by so fast? Donna Sebo here, where telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the toll-free number to call in to, which is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, I have a few little bits of odds and ends that I wanted to share with you, plus a powerful story about a person who, as an immigrant, came here to the United States and achieved something that he never thought he could. So we'll be sharing that with you also. Yard sales. My goodness, in my neighborhood, there are so many people putting on yard sales. You'll see signs all over the place. Well, of course, the weather is beautiful, and if you're one of those people that really likes to look for bargains, estate sales, yard sales are really positive. Now, here are some tips that I think if you really want to get into it, there are so many people that are looking for bargains. Maybe you're a college student and you're wanting to furnish your dorm room. Or maybe you are just starting out in a new environment and maybe you've got some children and you say, gee whiz, I really don't want to spend a whole bunch of money on these kids. They're going to outgrow certain things, so I want to go shopping and see what I can do. Well, yard sales are really, really good bargains. And they are a lot of work to put on, but if you like to go to them, I have some wonderful tips to share with you. So we'll take this caller first, and then afterwards I'll share some tips with you about saving money and shopping those yard sales or garage sales, whatever term you like. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
JL. I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
From Brooklyn. Welcome.
Yes.
I understand those temps back there have been pretty high.
Yeah, it's been very hot for the last couple of weeks.
Well, thank you. You can keep the heat. We've sort of been chilly over here in the Pacific Northwest, but now it's absolutely awesome. It's just right around 69 to 73 degrees. It's perfect. We just love it. But you can keep your 90-degree temperatures. We don't want them. Okay, dear, down to business with you, JL. Education. That's the first word that's coming up. And I'm getting another two words. No nonsense. Follow through. So you've got five words there. Education, no nonsense, follow through. Now, why this is coming through is apparently you feel like you're stuck. And to be able to make the shift of change that you want, with the momentum of accomplishment that you wish to achieve, it's going to take a concentrated focus. There are no shortcuts here. I would encourage you, if you say, gee whiz, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up, go take an aptitude test at your local junior college, or you can check it out online and maybe get one online. But I want you to check things out because it's time for you to take off and get rid of the old image of yourself that doesn't fit. It's sort of like trying to wear somebody else's girdle that's a size 2. It doesn't work. So it's time for you to refresh yourself, to really look at yourself in a new way, and get on with your life as you want to live it. And don't have regrets about those associations with people that didn't work out. Many of those individual situations, the person was needy and you felt like this was a role that you had to play. And you said, gee, if I give, then it's going to be a good thing. But what you found out is that you got literally stomped on. And whether it was in a working environment or in a personal situation, you said, I don't need this anymore. I've got enough scars inside my soul. I don't need to have any more. And I want to say, good. This is very good. You're finally starting to awaken to who you are as an individual. So invest in yourself. This is very important, whether it is reading books, taking classes, developing new associations with people. Invest in yourself, because this is the time to do it. And your financial condition and other things will stabilize and will level out. But you're really in a transformational period here, and a part of you is fighting it because the old self doesn't want to be sent down to the garbage dump. But it's time to let old beliefs, the old self, the old images be put in the attic, so that you don't let them clutter up your space mentally, physically, spiritually, or emotionally anymore. What would you like to ask me?
Well, I'm currently looking for jobs. I just graduated from a master's degree.
Congratulations.
Yes, and I'm looking for jobs, and I'm not sure if I'll be able to find a job anytime soon. I actually
what kind of work are you interviewing today?
School psychology.
All right. You're going to need to look at some different modalities. Do you have any mentors that you really had a lot of respect for that you could go and maybe have some time to chat with?
I believe I can think of one or two.
Good. What I'd encourage you to do is pick up the phone and call them and ask mm-hmm. them where they would recommend you engage yourself. Because mm-hmm. the school psychology, you have just come out of college. You have really mm-hmm. very little practical experience. So mm-hmm. I think what is going to occur is that they are going to encourage you to volunteer. Now, if you want to stay in New York, there are many different environments. You have charter schools. You have all kinds of opportunities. And you need to ask yourself if you would be open to relocating in another environment. If you're willing to relocate, then you're going to find there will be more opportunities for you. I am looking at 1, 2, 3, there's as many as 6 different volunteer positionings that you could be integrated within, and that might open up a door for you in a modality that would suit you. But I would say I would do some conversation with these mentors and mm-hmm. see what they would recommend to you.
Well, I just went on a job interview today at a local public school. Do mm-hmm. you think that I might get the job there?
That's up in the air because they have got a number of applicants. Now, your degree mm-hmm. is going to work in your favor. But there are a number of other people that do have experience that you do not have.
Yes, that's true. I lack the experience because I'm
right.
new.
So what you can do to gain some experience is to become involved in an environment
mm-hmm.
on a part-time basis. Call it an internship that allows you
to finish my internship, actually.
I know, hon, but this is different. You've gotten the degree. Now
mm-hmm.
there needs to be another aspect here. So you've got to stay active.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be cost effective for you. It will mm-hmm. enable you to network with people in different areas that your skills could be put to.
Mm-hmm.
But I would talk to your mentors. I think they're going to have some very good suggestions.
Okay. But I will eventually get something soon, right?
Oh, yes, eventually. There is actually going to be an opportunity for you to get a working position, but it's not going to have a title to it. It's not going to be a big title. But don't worry about that. What you want to do mm-hmm. is get your foot in the door. You want to
okay.
earn your stripes now. You,
mm-hmm.
and that comes with practical application.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much, Donna.
Oh, you're very welcome, JL, and you just enjoy this beautiful summer weather.
Okay, thank you. Have a
you're
good
welcome,
day.
Dear. Let us know how you do.
Okay, I will.
All right. Thanks, JL.
Thank
this
you.
Is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me today, 888-815-9756. Now, I know we're going to take a break in just a moment. I want to let you know tomorrow we're going to be talking about crash. When UFOs fall from the sky, Kevin Randall is going to be my guest. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about one of New York's best. That's right, the Men in Blue. We're going to be talking about CYA that was not written by, but published by, the son of a New York police positioning, and that's Barry Weiner. And Barry has really some very special things to share with us, but this is a story his dad put together before he died and was not able to publish it, so Barry's carrying on the tradition. So we've got some interesting guests these next couple of days, and I invite you to join me here on bbsradio.com. Let's go take a break. When we come back, I'll pass along some tips. We'll be with you in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you that have had very unique paranormal experiences, dreams, precognitive dreams, maybe out-of-the-body happenings, whatever might have been something very exceptional for you, I'd love to hear your story. I'm gathering stories for a book, and I'm wanting to collect 100, so I would love to include yours. If you have a story about the paranormal, won't you send it to me? Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Be sure to put in the subject line the story for Donna's book or the equivalent thereof so I can identify it. And send it along, and I will need your contact information as well so I can respond to you. So I look forward to getting that. Again, any kind of unique spiritual paranormal experience that you have had, I would like to know about it, because I think the more we can share our experiences with others, the less fear we'll have about this wonderful capacity that is innate within us that we call psychic ability. And it comes in so many different ways, different expressions, that I think, again, it's good to share with others what has been experienced. So I welcome your story. Okay, I promised you some tips on garage sales. Now, when you're in your neighborhood, that most of the time you're going to see signs that are homemade. And a tag sale is one term, garage sale. You know, there's all kinds of little situations that are put out there in the way of signs. But if you have that simplistic sign, usually they're going to be selling things. They're getting rid of clothes, they're getting rid of toys. Maybe they're moving. I know in our area, we have a lot of military families. So many times they like to have garage sales, and they're just getting rid of a whole bunch of stuff because they can't take it with them. So this is where you can really find some good bargains. Now, if you see some real fancy signs, that may be meaning that it's more upscale, so you're not going to have as much as what you would consider the bargain price. Also, it's become traditional among yard sale hosts, people that seem to like to do this on a regular basis. They have what they call stuff the bag special. Now, what this is, they put out bags of a particular size, and customers can get as much as they can fit into said bag for a set price. So it might be $5 for the bag, and whatever you can get into it, you got it. And it's a good way to move a lot of stuff out when you're having a garage sale. And you know what? If you're buying clothing, before you put it in that stuff the bag, then what you want to do is roll it up. Don't just put it in, but roll it up, because that'll give you more space in the bag, and you're going to be able to add more goodies to it. And don't say no to freebies. You know, there's often a free bottle of water or cookies, but that may be really, really nice. But what you should do, apparently, and I didn't say that correctly, you should say no to freebies. Mm-hmm. They say that according to market studies, when you pick up that freebie, it subconsciously gets you to spend 20% more than you intended. So if you're getting free cookies and free water, you're getting comfortable. Hey, they use that all over the place. They've done that at major box stores as far back as I can remember. And at any store, I mean, this is just the way it is. So when you're at a garage sale, they say if you don't want to end up spending more, well, you're getting a bargain anyway. I say take the water and take the cookie if they offer it to you. Well, you know what? It is something that if you find what you like, that's all that's important. And it's fun to do these things. I've known gals, my goodness, Lynn Drail, who is considered the queen of eBay. I can remember interviewing her, and she and her family members would get in their vehicles early in the morning and go out to the garage sales. They tried to be there. They would go through the newspaper and see what listings were there. And then they would just say, okay, here we are. And they tried to be there first thing in the morning, because if they were there first, then they were able to look over everything before it got, you know, picked over by people later in the day. So that's just a few tips. And garage sales can be a lot of fun. And you know what? Sometimes there are certain neighborhoods, they put them on regularly. They're sort of like the rummage sales that churches and different groups will have, like around the holiday season. They are there. And many times a lot of neighbors will get together and say, gee whiz, I don't want to do it on my own, but I'll contribute to the garage sale. So there's just a lot of fun you can have. And what's fascinating is to find out what people have collected through the years and what they're trying to get rid of. It's really quite an interesting experience. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I said I had a story about someone that had come over to this country as an immigrant. His name is Meb, and he was from Africa, and his father had been a freedom fighter in the war against Ethiopia, and he was in Eritrea at the time. And he said, when I was 5 years old, I had to, along with my family, flee for my life. Now he was separated from members of his family, and it was a very, very difficult time for them. He spent 2 years in the Sudan, settled in Italy, found work, and for 5 years, the only connection with his family were letters and items that he managed to send to them. And he said it really was very, very tough. His father worked very hard while he was in Italy, but he finally had enough money to send for the rest of his family. And he said, Italy was only a stop with our family's journey. We were determined to get to America because we had understood it was a land of freedom and opportunity. I'm looking at the clock. I realize that I'm out of time and that I'm not going to be able to finish the story, but I'm going to finish this story and probably will do it tomorrow. And I would like for you to remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. If you're feeling as if life has been sort of unfair to you, sometimes you need to look at other people and maybe spend some time walking in their shoes of experience to realize that you've got a lot to be grateful for. And don't take anything for granted. Be good to yourself. Be good to others. Remember, what goes around comes around. This is Donna Sebo. It's time to say goodbye. We'll be here, same time, same place, talking about UFOs right here on the Donna Sebo Show on BBSRadio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.